puzzles like this end in funny ways. In fact, it's hard to say the gospel of the Lord, the good news of the Lord, when they end with something that isn't such good news for someone. But that's not the purpose. The gospel is not here simply to make us feel good. The gospel is not here simply to assuage the difficulties and the challenges of the world around us. The gospel is here to proclaim the good news of Jesus. But when we know the story of Jesus, we know that human misfortune is part and parcel of life. And so it is that we look at the world around us today, and perhaps we come to church and we go to the Lord and we are seeking some sort of comfortable word when we realize that the pandemic is only worsening yet again, and worse again than before. So much so that, as has been announced, this will be the last time we gather as a group, at least until the middle of December, and maybe even longer, depending on circumstances. And so it's a good time for us to reflect on a gospel like this. Not so much the end part about the weeping and gnashing of teeth. Lord knows we know enough about that. But instead to think a little bit about this story that Jesus is telling. Remember, we've been looking through the Gospel of Matthew for the last several months. And throughout that time, we have heard the parables of Jesus. And just yet another reminder that parables are stories where we can see ourselves in one or another of the characters, or even in the situation. We can even see ourselves in an inanimate object in the story. It doesn't matter. The whole idea is so that we enter into the story, and entering into the story, we would find a deep answer that springs to us not from the outside, but actually from our own experience, from deep within our hearts. And so today we have what is commonly called the parable of the talents. Now, most of us use the word talent to denote some sort of special capacity, some sort of special ability. Like, we know how talented our music ministers are as they share their wonderful gifts with us. Some have even said that I'm a fairly talented preacher. Sometimes I wonder. Talent to us doesn't mean what it is in this gospel lesson. In fact, it is said that our use of the word talent actually derives from this particular story. So, what is a talent, after all, when we are listening to Jesus tell this story? Let's put ourselves in the place of those who would be listening for the very first time. A talent is an amount of money. That's obvious from the story. Well, just how much money is it? And by a certain reckoning, we might be able to say that one talent is the amount of money that you would make in an entire year. So when the master is entrusting this money to his servants, to his slaves, it isn't a meager sort of amount. It's not a meager portion. The one slave gets 5 talents. He is being entrusted with the equivalent of 5 years' wages. Think of your most productive year and multiply it by 5. That's what this man has been entrusted with. The second gets 2, not as many. But as part of the story, we're told each according to his ability. So obviously the master had great confidence in the ability of servant number 1, that he would entrust 5 talents to him. He still had great confidence in servant number two, maybe, but not as much. Because servant number two, he gave 2 talents, but that's a lot of money. It's 2 years' wages. And even the guy at the end there, that third slave, that third servant, he gets but 1 talent. Well, I'd be happy if somebody gave me an extra year's salary right off the bat. But they all know it's not their money. And so they do what they feel best. Pretty much, perhaps, what they might do if they had that much money. The first gentleman goes out and he invests it, or whatever he did with it, to multiply it, to double it. And that's the key, that both of them, no matter what they were given, they were able to double what they were given. So this tremendous abundance that they were given is now twice, 200% what it was before. And so the contrast comes not so much with the first two, but with the third. The third is given a substantial amount, just like the others, but it's clear that the master doesn't have quite as much confidence in him, but he fenced some trust in him. I mean, why would you entrust somebody with that much money? But notice the difference. The other two, they just got about the business. They just went to work and took care of things and were able to multiply the master's resources. But the third one has no confidence in the master, no confidence in himself. And so he takes the money and he buries it. Oh, he keeps it safe. He knows that if he doesn't bring it back whole and entire, he's going to be in big trouble. What he doesn't realize is that because he was operating out of the motivation of fear and simply kept the money safe, that wasn't enough for this harsh master. He should have known better. He even says it. The master reiterates it. You know that I reap where I did not sow. So why didn't you do even the least little thing with it? And so he's thrown out into the abyss. Well, what does that mean for us? We are given talents, both in the way in which this word is used in the gospel. We are given many physical resources. Few of us in this room today are living in abject poverty. And so we might ask ourselves, what are we doing with what we have been given? If in our discipleship we truly understand that absolutely everything that we own and possess does not belong to us, but rather is loaned to us by God, in a very similar way that the master gives his money, his resources, in such abundance to his servants. If we are true followers of Jesus, we realize more and more in the course of our life that nothing we have belongs truly to us. As they say, you can't take it with you. It's all left behind. So nothing really belongs to us, but rather we're given use of it. And like these slaves, these servants in the gospel lesson today, we are being asked by God, who does own all of this, who is the creator of everything that is, that we would simply use what we have to produce more for the sake of the kingdom of God. It's also true not only of the talents used as money, as we hear in the gospel lesson, but also as we use the word talent. For each and every one of us can count at least one gift that we have been given by God, Each and every one of us can count at least one thing that we can do that is perhaps unique among the circle of our friends or within our family. None of us is without that kind of gift, not one. That is the constant testimony of the scriptures. We have reflected on that from the point of view of the spiritual gifts for the last year entirely. What gifts have you been given? We keep asking that. We say, discover them, develop them, but use them. That's what is happening here. The object lesson for us, the important lesson, is to take away something here. And that is to take away that the safe way is not enough. The safe way does not build the kingdom of God. That's what happened to that third servant. He did nothing objectively bad. He just didn't do anything. He didn't use any of what he had been given in order to build up his master's resources. What we have been given, not only financially, but in the spiritual gifts, more importantly, we are being given something so that we can use it to enlarge the kingdom of God, to make our master's resources bigger, deeper, better, more complete. That is what God has called you and me to do in the world. To take what we have been given, the abundance that God has given us, and to use it to expand the power and the influence of God in our world. To make it more, we are the instruments of God. All of this has been building up through all of these different parables. We started with the simplest of them. You know, the kingdom of God is like a mustard seed, and we have built on that, built up more and more complex, more and more sophisticated, until today we realize that each and every one of us is an agent of God to build the kingdom of God. And if we take the safe way, if we take what God has given us and we simply squirrel it away somewhere, hoping that when God calls us from this world, we can simply give back to God what he gave to us, perhaps the fate of this third servant might be ours. Because God will look at us and he will say, I gave you a mission. And that mission was to build my kingdom. What have you done? I gave you those gifts not simply to give back to me. You would use them. And you would allow them to have power. Because they came from me. And I am the creator of the world. I gave you these gifts so that you could be my co-workers, my co-creators of a new and lasting kind of world, a world that ultimately becomes a world without end. That's the challenge we're given. Oh, but it may seem so difficult in our current situation, our current circumstances, because nothing is as we know it, nothing is what we're used to. But maybe that's the challenge for you and for me today. That we realize that the kingdom of God is not just built in our own little self-contained bubble. But rather, there is a world out there that is hurting. There is a world out there that is insecure. There is a world out there that needs the good news of Jesus. And we can begin to ask ourselves, what is it? What is it that we must do? We do not earn God's love. We do not earn God's grace. It is always there. The only question that will be asked of us is, what have you done with it? Have you allowed it to grow? Have you done what you needed to do to make it rich, and deep, and broad, and big? Or did you just take it and bury it, and keep it hidden from everybody else for safekeeping? That's the question. And so I leave you with that to think on today. What will you do in the days to come to bring the kingdom of God ever more deeply alive, not only in our families and in our own community here, but in a world that needs this good news so much, so deeply, so absolutely? If we but proclaim that, perhaps we will also hear from God, "Well done, good and faithful servant."